Callie Crossley. This is Under the Radar. And now for the part of the show we call Lagniappe. That's Creole for something extra. More than 300,000 people in the Boston area are Spanish-speaking, but you might be surprised to know they are not all speaking the same language. Turns out multiple Spanish dialects are merging into a kind of linguistic mashup. Professor Daniel Urker of Boston University has been following the evolution of the merging dialects. He joins me in studio now to talk about his Spanish in Boston research project. Professor Urker, welcome.
Thank you so much, Callie.
So explain briefly what the study's all about.
Sure. So what I'm interested in kind of the big picture sense is how and why languages change. So while I'm focusing on Spanish in particular, really what the kind of linguist I am, which is a sociolinguist, is primarily interested in is how all languages change over time, human languages. And one of the things that we know is one of the greatest catalysts or kind of one of the more robust engines of language change is what we call language contact. What we mean by that is speakers of different languages coming into intense and sustained contact with each other will often produce change in either or both of the linguistic systems. And what we're talking about here is an interesting case of what we call dialect contact. So in the same way that everybody knows that somebody from Boston sounds different when they speak English from the way somebody sounds from London or Alabama or New Zealand, what we have here in Boston when we talk about Spanish is what we have equivalently all of those different kinds of speakers from all over the world converging in a single location. But in this case, instead of varieties of English, we're talking about varieties of Spanish. And so what we see is that when individuals from certain regions of the Spanish-speaking world, the Caribbean, from the highlands of the Andes, from central Mexico or coastal Mexico, when we have individuals who bring with them very different varieties of speaking to a singular location, in particular urban locations, where everybody interacts with each other in a frequent way, we get particularly rapid language change. And so that's what I'm taking a look at.
So when you just gave the example of somebody in Boston and then somebody in London and somebody in New Zealand, my mind goes mostly to accent, not word changes. But what you've begun to evidence in your work, and you're an expert, by the way, in linguistics and Spanish linguistics, is that there's actual word changing in this merging as well as accent changing. That's different, it seems to me.
Sure. Well, so you can kind of think about the way a linguist looks at language through a microscope. And when we're really dialed in looking at language, when we're looking at the tiniest things that we're interested in, we're often looking at single sounds. If you then roll back your microscope a little more, if you have a little less resolution and you're a little farther out, you're looking at words. And an even higher roll up of your microscope, or a bird's eye view if you want to use another kind of simple analogy, is you're looking at the way words are put together in whole sentences. So you can find data or patterns of change at all of these levels. So the way people put whole words into phrases – and sentences, the way people choose particular words.
Give me an example right now.
So let's see. If you look at – well, some of the stuff we're going to talk about in a moment, there is you might not be able to pinpoint it if you listen to it, but almost all Spanish speakers are very sensitive to the way one particular sound gets produced, namely S. And in particular, S that shows up at the end of words or inside of words, but at the end of what linguists refer to as syllables, which you might remember from grammar school. That particular speech sound is very differently produced throughout the Spanish-speaking world. Sometimes it's not produced at all. Sometimes it's produced in a really kind of normal way, in the way that you might be like, oh, well, an S sounds like an S. But sometimes you might hear it in ways you're like, wait a minute, that doesn't sound like an S at all. And the way that that particular sound is produced is kind of like a geographic marker oftentimes of where someone is from.
So you can't hide if you
– No, ma'am.
The S will give you away.
It will absolutely give you away.
Let's listen to some collected voices. And we should mention that you have a lab at Boston University where you're conducting this research. And again, your project is Spanish in Boston Research. And then you can tell us after we listen to first Jose from El Salvador and then Miguel from the Dominican Republic. We're going to play them back to back, and then we'll have you explain to us what we just heard. So here we go.
Estuve con mis niñas. Tengo dos niñas bien lindas. Y allí la paso en casa con ellas en el día. Y por la noche, pues, a trabajar.
So now...
15, fui a la movie con los niños, la pasé con la familia, todo tranquilito.
So there you go. Jose from El Salvador, Miguel from the Dominican Republic. I was rushing there. So tell us the difference.
Okay, so Jose's talking about – they're both talking about what they're doing for the holidays. And Jose is referring to – both of them are in fact referring to their children. The word in Spanish for child is niño. When you have more than one child, you put an S on the end of it and you get niños. Now, in each case, both men is talking about – the multiple children they have. So if there were no variation in the way that word were produced across varieties of Spanish, you would get niños from each speaker. But from the speaker from El Salvador, you get niños, but the speaker from Dominican Republic, you get niño. So he doesn't produce his final S.
Hmm.
Now, it may seem like a small and kind of middling and insignificant difference, but what you find is that, imagine that Jose and Miguel, which is pseudonyms, of course, imagine that we, 20 years from now, interview and record their children. What we'll find is that these strong regional differences, so you can say with some great probability that someone given this social background from El Salvador will typically produce his S's at this kind of rate. Someone from the Dominican Republic will produce them at a comparably lower rate. What we find is that across generations, these differences are way less reliable. So you might get a young Dominican woman who produces all of her S's, or a young Salvadoran man who doesn't produce his. What's interesting about that is not necessarily the S itself. There's nothing super interesting intrinsically about an S sound, but we can use it as a diagnostic to see if these different varieties are coalescing. And that's essentially what I'm – one of the things that I'm doing in my lab.
And since – as you, Professor Daniel Urker from Boston University, have explained, you're a social linguistic. So it's not just about the words and the S's dropping, but about the social impact. The social impact is that it doesn't matter as the generations go forward, or is there even a greater impact that – because we're all about under the radar here. So
that's a terrific question. So – what you find is that the most common category within Latin America to describe different varieties of Spanish is nation state or country. So here in the United States, we use cities oftentimes or regions. So we'll say from the South or from Boston or from some other region or city. We wouldn't say something like, I speak Missouri English.
Yeah, that's
right?
True.
What you find is that the most salient and most common category for describing varieties of Spanish is nation state. So people say, oh, he speaks Puerto Rican Spanish or Dominican Spanish or Colombian Spanish. What's really hard about that, in addition to that it's a really kind of rough proxy, is that if the trends in the data that I find are true – that is, you find diminished regional differences across generations in the way people produce particular sounds. It is not the case that people are less interested in country of origin. So they're, while individual speech across generations may become more like each other, their conception of nation state and identity is still very important. So you may be a Dominican who produces all of his or her S's over a course of a couple of generations, but it still will matter very much to you, typically, that you are Dominican and not from some other country with respect to your identity as a person. So what's interesting about this is that in situations where you don't have a lot of contact, there tends to be a tight correlation between this rough category nation state and linguistic behavior. But here in the United States, where Spanish is changing at a greater rate, this relationship is a little more tenuous.
My guest is Professor Daniel Urker. He's a professor of Spanish and linguistics at Boston University, and we're discussing his community-based study examining how Spanish is spoken in the greater Boston area, and more importantly, how many of these dialects are merging. So that brings me back to your social linguistic framework to this question about code switching. Because if you are from Colombia and you're here in the United States, and so you are dropping S's or picking them up as you may because others around you are doing it, in your own dialect speech community, do you continue to use the dialect of origin and then code switch when you are outside of that group to speak to me or anybody else in other speech communities?
Absolutely. So that question gets to the heart of a really robust notion within the field of sociolinguistics that we refer to as one's linguistic repertoire. So in the same way that a musician with a great depth will be able to play across genres and will be able to pull up a song or a piece for an appropriate occasion, language users are equally adept and equally savvy at identifying what part of their linguistic repertoire is particularly appropriate for a given social context. So the way that I or you would speak to your best and dearest friends is not the same way that you would speak to someone when they're a perfect stranger but you're trying to get a job interview from them, or rather a job during an interview. What you find is that within the context of bilinguals, where the bilinguals are Spanish speakers and English speakers here in the United States, oftentimes what these individuals have as part of their linguistic repertoire, to put it very, very, very coarsely, is they often have individuals who are on a continuum of bilingualism. Some of them will know a great deal of English. Some of them will know very little. Some speakers will know a great deal of Spanish. Some will not. And within both of those continuums, you have people selecting various formal forms or less informal forms. So absolutely, someone's linguistic repertoire, especially a Spanish speaker here in Boston, almost certainly involves knowing some kind of formal and informal English and some kind of formal and informal Spanish.
So that means then that you maintain that core original dialect, if you will, because I'm from the South. I'm also African-American, so I can code switch out of any of those groups. And in a minute, Professor Urker, I could just talk to you just like this.
Absolutely.
The minute I get home, I'm on the plane. I say, how y'all doing?
Mm-hmm.
What's happening? That's just my normal conversation. But here I would speak differently.
Absolutely. So you have a robust and rich linguistic repertoire that you draw from in a sensitive and savvy way, given your social context.
All right. So what I've learned from your work is that English has a particular impact on all of this merging. But you could just move to any other country and also have the same kind of impact. So I'm wondering, because that people are coming here where English is the dominant language, what is the impact as you have seen it in changing all of these different dialects?
That's a terrific question. So and you can answer it using my clumsy microscope metaphor again. You can answer it at a bunch of different levels of analysis, what a linguist would call levels of analysis. So you can look at it at the sound level, or you can look at it at the word level. So let's take an example from the sound level. So most non-contact variety speakers of Spanish, which I mean is individuals who haven't had much contact with English. So those are the two languages we're interested in here. When a monolingual speaker of Spanish is pausing during speech instead of saying what a native English speaker would say, so how was your trip? It was pretty good. The typical discourse marker in Spanish is a instead of a. What you find, however, and what's interesting about that is it has no meaning. What it means is, hold on, I'm not done thinking. So you have a. What you find is across generations, Spanish speakers here in the United States, many of them will adopt a instead of a, which suggests a substantial shift in the sound system that is in their mind, because is actually not a sound that exists in Spanish. So that's a very small thing, but if you pull a bunch of these things together, like S is shifting and A becoming what you can put together is kind of a constellation of factors that tell you change is underway.
So what is the practical impact of this? What happens on the ground because of this merging? We broke the story on this show on Under the Radar that, for example, the healthcare.gov did not start off with a Spanish language page. Mm-hmm. So what Spanish language do they put on the page, given that you're saying all this stuff is merging and they're trying to reach the widest population of Spanish speakers?
So there are two ways to answer that question. One is to say that the practical implications are not totally clear. So in a lot of cases, what a linguist like me is trying to do first is simply measure something and understand something. And it's often the case that someone who is better at application will take our linguistic research and say, here is why this matters. So my job is really to do good science. But some of the more typical practical applications have to do with things like providing bilingual services in, say, healthcare or education or in the legal system. So a case in point, let's say you go to you're at the hospital and you don't speak whatever language is the dominant language of the culture. This could be English, Spanish, whatever. You should have, in an ideal scenario, interpreter services who not only speak the language in general, but who speak your variety of the language. So that's one area in which there's a direct impact. But also with respect to issues of Spanish or American Spanish, if we first have to know what that is before one can apply identify the linguistic needs or resources that we should be providing as a society to people.
So you got a ways to go before you determine the actual bottom line of this.
This is painstaking, time consuming, and it goes at a slow pace.
Really?
Yeah. Yes. But I think we're learning things faster than the languages are changing. I can at least tell you that much.
Well, I just love this, and I'm so glad you were able to share this with us here on Under the Radar, because I find this going on really under the radar here in Boston is completely captivating to me. So thank you so much, Professor Erker.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Daniel Erker is a professor of Spanish and linguistics at Boston University, and we were discussing his community-based study examining how Spanish is being merged here in the greater Boston area. Well, that's it for this edition of Under the Radar. Join us next week at 6 p.m. for another full hour of the stories you may have missed, including something extra. In the meantime, you can find our show and links to stories we discussed today on the web at wgbhnews.org/UTR. I'm Callie Crossley. Our engineer is John Parker, and our producer is Abby Ruzica. Under the Radar is a production of WGBH.